welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Friday morning here in Abu Dhabi.
Ooh.
Thursday afternoon in San Jose, California, which is where Tim Bontemps sits. Long way from here, brother.
That is true. Many, many, many hours. Do we know what time it is in Abu Dhabi?
At the moment, I have no idea. It's 12:30 in the morning.
We had another off mic time screw up from Brian today, and so we know that the world is going on as it should be, because we've had scheduling.
Also on the West Coast, joining us from Los Angeles, California, where he's on NBA Today this week, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. How you boys doing?
Big shout out to our producer Jackson Agello, who's from vacation in Florida this week. So you guys are all spread out across the map at this time of year. Hey, this was schedule release week. Bontemps, you wrote a story about the schedule release, specifically as it came to the TV schedule on Thursday. I wondered if you could kind of hit the highlights of what you saw and how it's definitely how the league is featuring the teams coming into the season.
So, yeah, obviously everybody waits to see, get the rush just to run through and see where all the games are. I think some of the interesting things that stood out to me, the fact that we're going to have opening night with two Western Conference games, with Denver and the Lakers, followed by the Suns and Warriors and the Chris Paul revenge game. I think that's an indication when you start to look through the numbers in the schedule of just how much this schedule is slanted towards Western Conference teams. I went through and did the math on it. Warriors have the most national TV games with 29. That's ABC, ESPN, TNT games for this. We're not counting the NBA TV games.
Wow. Disrespectful.
Disrespectful. You can also see when some of the smaller market teams say, oh, we have 12 national TV games or 10 national TV games, and really they have one or two. It shows where the differences are, since most of those games are simulcast. But there's six teams with more than 20 or more. Warriors, Lakers, Suns, and Denver in the West. Celtics and Knicks in the East. There's nine with over 10. Grizzlies, Clippers, Kings, and Spurs, all with more than 10. Victor Wembanyama gets 11 national TV games. Wow. There's only five in the East. Sixers, Heat, and Bucks. So as you can see, yeah, plus the two at the top, that's five. Yeah. So it's definitely a schedule that's slanted pretty heavily towards the West. And you know, as you look through, obviously, you know, Christmas Day, bunch of interesting marquee games. Got the Knicks and Bucks starting off the day, followed by the two ABC games with Denver and Golden State, and then Boston and the Lakers. Then we've got the disgruntled point guard bowl, maybe, with Philly and Miami. We'll see if one or both of Damian Lillard and James Harden are in that game or not. And then I assume Ben McMahon will be in Phoenix for Dallas at Phoenix with Kyrie and KD going head to head.
And also, it's a nice bit of scheduling because Luka and Book don't have to ship their Christmas gifts to each other.
They can present
them in person. You know, those guys like to get up close and personal, so they can just have their gift swap right there. And perhaps so can KD and Kyrie. I'm not quite sure where they are as far as the Christmas exchange possibilities go at this point.
I really don't have a good feel for that. You know, when I was in Dallas for that game, when they played, like, they kind of ignored each other, but I don't know if that was supposed
They did not acknowledge each other.
No.
One iota.
Yeah, but I don't know if that was I just couldn't read it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know where their relationship is. I do know that Booker and Luka certainly do not like each other. And as Book said, hey, you want some
stuff?
Like, here it is. Like, we got some.
Yeah. I liked that. I liked everything about that.
That will definitely be a fun game. At the other end of the schedule, there's only eight teams. There's eight teams that only have one national TV game: Indiana, Orlando, Toronto, Washington, Detroit, Charlotte, Portland, and Houston. And, you know, which again, as an indication of where the league thinks those teams are. not too surprising. Mm-hmm. Thought it was interesting the Pelicans only had six and that the Thunder had eight. I think that's a sign of where those teams are sort of going from that standpoint, at least until we see Zion Williamson actually on the court. But thought the Thunder getting eight games on those networks was a sign that there's some investment in them. Certainly Victor getting 11. And the other thing, this came out on Tuesday. I thought it was really interesting that there was only one team with three games on ESPN or TNT during the group play of the in-season tournament. And that was Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs. I thought that was interesting that the league really clearly was trying to, hey, we got this new tournament. We got this new star. Going to put them together, try to get people to pay attention to this thing early on. And even in that too, that was very heavily slanted towards Western Conference teams getting the bulk of those national TV games during the in-season tournament. So, you know, I think when you look at the way the two conferences lay out, there's a few teams that are really good at the top of the East, and there's a lot of depth in the West. And I think we saw that generally play out that way with how the league laid out the schedule for the season.
So I will say that I don't want to overplay the Chris Paul, will he start story or not? Because, you know, Chris Paul started every game in his career. You know, let's just see how training camp goes and whatever.
Oh.
What?
Listen. Get your butt on the bench and come in as a sixth man and stop making a big deal about it. Like, don't make this Steve Kerr and
coming,
this,
is he coming off the bench?
That's got a freaking championship together. Like, stop making it. Dude, sacrifice your ego a little bit, which you've told hundreds of teammates over the years, and say, you know what? I'm transitioning. This lineup's won a championship together. I want to fit in as well as I can. I'm going to do the best I can and adapt to being one hell of a six man.
So Brian,
stop babying a 38-year-old.
So Brian, we know McMahon. We know McMahon is a big time youth basketball coach down in Dallas. I can only imagine what the conversations about starting lineups are with him.
Listen, we actually had one. As you know, I've got twins, and I told them, because you know we change lineups up, and I always say, hey, one of you guys has to come off the bench when we've got like everybody here. And it's why do we have to? I'm like, dude, I can't show favoritism and have both you guys in the freaking starting lineup every game.
Look, well, speaking of youth basketball,
if I can have that conversation with 10-year-olds, Steve Kerr can have it with a 38-year-old.
Well, look, so his first time coming off the bench is going to be at Phoenix. Or no, they're home. They're home that night. I'm sorry.
No, but yeah, Bontemps said it was. I think you called it the revenge game. Maybe my audio wasn't. Was it revenge or reserve game? Which one?
I said revenge, but look, you know, I mean, listen, if you are going to send a message about how things are going to go, to be a very clear way to do it. Have them come off the bench in the opening night of the season against his former team on national TV. I mean, look, I could see some scenario where maybe they go back and forth with bigger and small lineups like they did a little bit last year. I think that would be silly. I think Chris Paul should just be coming off the bench. They had the best five-man unit in the league last year. He should be coming off the bench. He should be coming off the bench in that game, and that would be a good way to indicate where you're going with things.
He's CP6 now for sixth man.
You are really hammering away on this. Anyway, I think it's going to be interesting. As far as Wembanyama being on national TV so much and so much early, mm-hmm. You guys know I've spent quite a bit of time with Victor. I've written a lot about him. I know a lot.
No idea.
I just am going to be for 90 seconds.
That's all I saw.
It's going to be cautionary here. He's going to take some time to get adjusted. He's going to have his moments where he looks very, very like a rookie. So,
well, we should say, because I didn't say it, his first game will be at home against the Dallas Mavericks. Another game we may see Tim McMahon at, I would assume, with Andrew Lopez.
Certainly assume that'll be in the building for that one. And listen, we can both have a ton of hype around Victor and also like not overreact on a game by game basis and realize.
Well, we can, because that's not the way America works.
We can.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's what's most important.
Well, you know, I don't know about you, but I control what I can control.
It is interesting that 6 of the 11 games they have on national TV are in the first month of the season. And 2 of them are in the first week. I do think that's first 2 weeks. Well, I do think that's an interesting thing.
Yeah, you have to load up early because there's going to be a ton of interest in him, like right off the bat. And then, like, the Spurs probably aren't going to be very good. Like, they're definitely will be good sooner than later, but sooner is not this season. So, you know, you don't want to have a bunch of national TV games on them after the All-Star break. Load up early. There's going to be a fascination with this guy. And then, you know, focus on teams that are going to be competing for playoff spots.
So a couple of things about the schedule. Because of the in-season tournament, there is a slight increase in back-to-backs for the teams this year.
Mm-hmm. Last year was a little over 13.3. This year is 14 even.
They've really tried to reduce travel back-to-backs where teams have to travel on back-to-backs in there. An average of 9 per team, which is, I believe, the lowest all time. So they're trying to do what
the league trumpeted that.
Yeah, they're trying to, but you know, the in-season tournament has a mildly negative back-to-back effect. You know, it is what it is. Now, the one thing that they do point out is that they're trying to prioritize player rest for high-profile national TV games. And the in-season tournament. So no team will play on either the day before or the day after all national television opening week games, although opening week, it's
right.
Opening night, it's hard to have a back-to-back.
I was going to say,
All five games on Christmas Day. Typically, the NBA doesn't play any games on Christmas Eve, so that's
just... That's a very easy non-back-to-back day, right?
All 16 games on ABC during Saturday nights and Sunday afternoons. So that's again something they've done in the past. They're trying to disincentivize guys to rest, to have rest days on the prime national TV games. They're still going to be, you know, Wednesdays and Thursdays are heavy back-to-back days. Those are national TV days, you know, Thursday, Fridays, you know, we're going to see that. And then the games are Martin Luther King Day, which I don't even know which those games are right now. There will be on TNT. There will be those games will not be. There will not be no back to backs for those games. So whatever that does for you.
Do you have a list in front of you of who has the most back to backs?
I do not.
No team has more than 15 back to backs.
I believe so. You know, I did NBA today and sitting down with the producers, they had all, you know, this thing all broken down. I probably should have asked them to forward it to me, but like in terms of all the like back-to-backs and 3 and 4 and 5 and 7, the Clippers are at or near the top of the list, which is interesting.
This is, I think, the second year in a row that this something like this has happened. And
well, it's been a longstanding issue, and part of why they're going to have a new arena, because they pick third when it comes to date availability at what was the building formerly known as Staples Center.
Right, but it's been particularly, I think, I hope I'm not going to get in trouble for this. I can see my phone ringing.
The Lakers are at the other end of the list.
It's been slightly worse the last 2 years in terms of the way the Clippers usage of crypto.com has been allocated. I think it's been slightly worse because they're on their way out. And so any 50-50 ball is going to the other direction.
Kawhi never plays anyway. So
yeah, but that has been how it's been for a long time though. Cause like I said, that's the drive. That's been obviously there's a bunch of reasons why you do this, but that's been the driving reason behind the Clippers and Steve Ballmer building this arena is because
I
thought it was because he wanted people to be able to, get in and out of El Mondo.
Obviously, you go in there and make a ton more money if you own the building and everything else. But from a basketball standpoint, they've been behind both the Kings and the Lakers this whole time they've been there, which is why they always are having to play, weird, you know, they get always the short end on the double headers with the Lakers at home, and they always have to, you know, that's always how it works out. And it's been more pronounced in recent years because of the schedule changes the league has made to have the New York teams and the LA teams have a lot more back-to-backs at the two arenas because they're cut down on travel. So then if the Lakers are picking first, they end up getting the team on the second night of the back-to-back a lot more often and that kind of stuff.
And it seems like when there's a afternoon night or night afternoon or whatever it is, it always seems like the Clippers get the short end.
Yes.
I'm sure it's not true, and I'm sure somebody could produce data, but
no, I would say it is. I would say it is true.
Yeah. I somebody who's gone to a lot of games in LA in recent years, it always seems like the Clippers are, if it's more desirable to be in the afternoon, they're at night and vice versa. So the NBA has a Rivals Week where they have, it's in January, the third week of January. I think they've got 11 national televised games that week. And so the Rivals Week, some of these are more interesting than others, let's be honest.
I have a couple have me scratch my head, but go on.
I think I can guess Dallas, the two that had you scratching your head. Dallas and Atlanta and Portland and San Antonio.
So one of the nights during quote unquote Rivals Week, the two rival games are Dallas at Atlanta, Portland at San Antonio.
Yeah,
Luka and Trey and Scoot and Victor is the thinking there.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty stretched thinking.
Yeah, I mean Luka and Trey, like I don't think there's any real rivalry there. Like they were traded for each other on draft night. Whoop-de-doo. Isn't San Antonio and Oklahoma City one of them? One of these.
Yes.
Games?
Well, that's like, Chet and that's yes. Chet and Victor.
I get that. I mean, they're trying to manufacture rivalry.
Or Presti and Pop, you're really
they are connected on Interstate 35, but you know
there is a good triple header on January 27th in that week, which is Heat Knicks, Philly at Denver, Embiid Jokic action. Hopefully they're playing
because will Embiid finally play in Denver for the first time in like 5 years.
Actually, the last time it happened was November 2019. We discussed this on NBA Today, and it might shock you that Ramona got a little bit defensive.
I remember, buddy. I was in Denver when all that happened a few months ago.
There's been injuries. There's been rest. There's been, you know, he's developed an allergic reaction to altitude in the last few years, apparently. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things going on there. We'll see.
Anyway.
Sixers versus Nuggets, we can say for sure.
January 27th, Heat at Knicks, Philly at Denver, mark that one. And then at night, Lakers at Warriors, the second trip in, but that should be good. So that's the week in between. That's in the Super Bowl off week. So
yeah, I believe
looking
so.
To capture the football audiences, it calms down there. So
once again, the Celtics are hosting a Sunday afternoon national TV game the day of the Super Bowl. Got Marcus Smart's return game that day, which would be interesting. Also believe it's the second straight year they play Memphis in that game, ironically, but this
Marcus
time
Smart getting Marcus a tribute video.
Oh yeah.
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 Probably might get like a tribute documentary.
I was going to say it might be the Celtics. So, you know, the Celtics and Lakers typically do a great job with those things, with the amount of history they have with that stuff. And the Marcus Smart, there's going to be a whole presentation for Marcus Smart. I'm sure that will be a fun one to be at. That'll be a fun one to be at. Marcus had his flaws on the court, but there are a few players that are connected more with the fan base than him with the Celtics. It'll be fun. Yeah,
there have been some questionable subjects for tribute videos, especially in recent years, but Marcus Smart in Boston's a no-brainer.
Yeah. The better question is, will he get his number retired?
I would be very curious to see how many.
The bar is very high.
I know.
Well, that's the thing. How many of those numbers in the rafters don't have a championship ring or an all-star appearance?
I don't think any.
Yeah. I would be shocked if the answer was no to both for any.
Reggie Lewis is probably the only one. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong, but I think his number is retired. I'm actually going to check that.
I also think he was at least an all-star.
No, he was an all-star. for sure. Yeah. I was just trying to, I was thinking about it when I was writing the story this morning. I was just wondering if Marcus would end up being in contention for that. I would guess he probably wouldn't be based off of the franchise's history, but
yeah,
they also do have a lot of jerseys retired. So
well, the thing is, the thing is, by the way, speaking of the Celtics, Kristaps Porzingis ruled out of the World Cup for Latvia 4 to 6 weeks with a plantar fasciitis, but they say they think he'll be back by start of training camp. So I don't know. We'll see about that. But the thing about retired numbers is when you look across the league, there's the complete absence of a standard. There are some teams that have retired numbers for guys who drove through town. Like, I'm only loosely exaggerating. And there are others where the standard is really, really super high. And or there's, you know, bad blood. Like, for example, the Timberwolves haven't retired 21 for Garnett.
That's insane.
I'm sure nobody is wearing 21, but
yeah, Garnett won't let them. I think is the answer there. Well, I think it's less about the bad blood.
Yeah, it's bad blood. There's bad blood. I mean, if you retired, you know, Garnett's number, I mean, Ray Allen probably has a case for his number to be retired in Boston, but there's bad blood.
Well, he has sort of begun a soft campaign to turn things around. He was at the Paul Pierce ceremony and talked a little bit about it. And I wouldn't be surprised if someday that happened.
Well, Carmelo Anthony's number will be retired in Denver. It just won't be because of him.
Huh, you got that right.
Well, Carmelo in New York is another interesting one. I would guess he won't, but it'll be an interesting one. Kristaps
Porzingis' number is retired in New York.
Because he wore number 6, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes, and Dallas, for that matter.
Wow, what an impact. What an impact.
It's like I used to say Rick Carlisle's number is retired in Boston. It just happens to be Paul Pierce's.
By the way, in case, I mean, I don't know if this is super well known, but LeBron switched his number back to 23 this year, because he decided to vacate 6, in honor of Bill Russell. He had the option of, wearing it out at the end of his career. Mm-hmm. So LeBron is like really yo-yoed between the 6 and 23. It's been
an interesting thing.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, like, I respect that he gave up 6. For Russell. You know, there was one time where LeBron campaigned for Jordan's 23 to be retired across the league. He was a big believer. I don't know if he's a believer in it now, but there was a time where he felt, you know, part of it was, I think, you know, he was in Miami and the Heat have retired number 23. They also retired number 13 for Dan Marino. Now,
the cross sport retired. I mean, hey, Tony Romo went through layup lines with the Mavericks.
I mean, like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, the standard for retired numbers is so ridiculous that you can't wear number 13 in Miami because of Dan Marino.
Yeah, I think they're going to end up actually retiring it for Bam one day. But
Bam is 13. So it's only ceremonially retired.
I believe so.
I wonder what LeBron's going to wear in Dallas when Kyrie recruits him to play for the Mavericks and makes the Lakers trade him there.
Well, he's not wearing number 6. That was Kristaps Porzingis. He took it out.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, Their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click ranger.com or just stop by. All right. Well, anyway, so I'm in Abu Dhabi, UAE, with Team USA, who on Friday night will play an exhibition game against Greece. Unfortunately, Giannis won't be playing because recovering from knee surgery. Spent, quite a bit of time with the Team USA this week. They've been practicing at NYU. Well, I shouldn't even say where they're practicing. Well, it's not that big of a secret. They're practicing at NYU. NYU has a campus in Abu Dhabi.
Wow, that's interesting. And
I can't say that the entire campus is nicer than the original one, but I can tell you that the basketball facility is nicer than the one at NYU. It is a spectacular facility. They are having a very, this team has great camaraderie. So one of the things that's going on, we've talked about this, I think, before. Steve Kerr and Grant Hill decided no tryouts, no cuts. And they picked the team in early July. They assembled most of it in May and June. They haven't budged from that. And not only is that something that hasn't happened very often with Team USA, it kind of did in 2021 for the Olympics, but that was COVID related. And there was a number of players who sort of fell off because they either got COVID or I don't even know what they said about Kevin Love. Kevin Love essentially got cut. I mean, I mean, Jerry Colangelo made that kind of clear. So they may not have officially called it that, but that's what it was. And so that was a surprise because even the top teams in the world that have a number of NBA players on them, there's NBA players who are going to be getting cut off their national teams, you know, one or two. And they're, you know, the top teams are having cuts. And so I was kind of surprised by that, especially because you didn't know how the team that had no experience playing together, nobody on this roster has played at high level FIBA before. Some of them will play junior level FIBA. Mm-hmm. But when I talk to the people here, one of the things that they're saying is it's had a very good side effect, which is that there's been a real good understanding of what the roles are going to be since everybody was told, like, this is what we need you to do. This is what we want you to do. That they've sort of, it's fallen into place because they're not competing with each other for slots. They're competing with each other for, trying to be the starting, four. Like I was talking to Brandon Ingram today. And when Steve Kerr and Grant Hill and Sean Ford, who's the general manager of the team, like came to him, they said, we want you to play the Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Durant role, which is that stretch four guy who creates matchup problems because of your size. And his game is similar to those two guys' games. Now, Brandon Ingram, when he plays with the Pelicans, handles the ball a lot. The ball is in his hands a lot. He is he gets assists. He's a trigger man. I wouldn't say go so far as say he plays point forward, but he's used to having the ball and creating. Well, that's not the role that he plays here. But they told him the role that they envisioned from him, I don't know, like months ago. And so when he started getting ready for this, he was watching footage of how Carmelo Anthony and Kevin Durant played. And so when he came in, he knew kind of the way he was going to play. Obviously there's still a lot of some adjustments, but like that's the way Steve Kerr has elected to go with this. And, you know, he basically declared like, look, Jalen Brunson's going to be our guy. He's going to be like sort of our captain and he's going to be our starting point guard. He kind of declared that before even training camp. So, okay. Tyrese Halliburton knows he's coming in and probably going to be the backup. And look, in 15 days, maybe we're going to be like, oh, I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. Tomorrow, this is their fourth exhibition game that they're having against Greece, okay? And Steve Kerr is going to start the same starting lineup in all four games. That's unheard of for a Team USA to be settled like that. So I will say that, and just being around them, there's great camaraderie within these guys. So, you know, look, they're in a tough spot. They are expected to win because that's what the Team USA situation is. If they lose is when they get attention. If they win, it's sort of like, oh, okay, of course they won. But this team is looking pretty good so far. And I've heard people say, like, well, this team's not that good. You know, it doesn't have superstars on it. I don't know, man. Like, yes, it's not the dream team. Okay. It's not the redeem team. I understand that. It's a pretty good roster. They got a lot going for them. They do a lot of things really well, and I think they're going to be successful.
I mean, it's the most talented roster by far. That's obvious. If you line up the NBA salaries, like my guess would be Canada's probably the only other team that would get into the nine figures as far as annual salary goes.
Not to do some math on Australia, but
okay, maybe
France,
but.
France too.
Would France? I would have.
To. I mean, they've got Rudy and Fournier to start with, so I would think they're going to be pretty close to that.
Maybe my point is,
Nick Batum, by the way, announced that he will play his last year of his career this year with the Clippers and then retire after the Olympics.
Really? Wow, FYI. That's interesting. I did not see.
Congrats
that.
To Nico.
By the way, this is a random aside, but since you're bringing up old players, I was watching. But the Bahamas play Argentina last night in a FIBA Olympic qualifier. Shout out to Chris DeMarco, Warrior assistant coach, winning in Argentina last night. Has DeAndre Ayton, Buddy Hield, and Eric Gordon, who switched to play for the Bahamas on that team. But the reason I bring it up is because we're talking about old players. Carlos Delfino is playing for the Argentinian team in this pre-qualifying tournament. Carlos Delfino was on the gold medal winning team 20 years ago. And has to be 43. I didn't even look it up last night. I'm going to look it up now. I saw him out there. I was like, what is this guy doing on the court? Pablo Prigioni is coaching the team and Delfino is starting.
That's impressive.
Like, this is wild. He hasn't played in the NBA, I think, in 9 years.
By the way, I think it's pretty incredible and impressive that Hield, Gordon, and Ayton would go play for the Bahamas, which I don't know if Ayton has played for them before.
I don't know that Ayton has. Hield.
Ayton has not. This has been a long odyssey to get DeAndre playing. And this Eric is just not, switched over 2 weeks ago, I think.
By the way, this is not part of the World Cup. The Bahamas didn't qualify for the World Cup. By the way, neither did Argentina. Jackson says that Delfino was 40.
Delfino is 40. He last played in the NBA in 2013 for the Rockets.
Wow.
When he was 30.
Anyway, this tournament that they're playing in Argentina, by the way, it'd be one thing if this tournament was in, you know, Sacramento. It's in Argentina. This is the tournament to qualify for the tournament next year to try to get into the Olympics.
Yeah, this is a qualifying tournament for the qualifying tournament.
That's right. And they got Ayton, Gordon, and Buddy Hield to go to Argentina for it. That is, keep an eye on the Bahamas.
Guys want to be part of the Paris Olympics. I do think, I didn't know that about Batum. I think that's pretty awesome, though, that he's basically said, hey, it's been a hell of a run. I want to finish strong. And where else, like, what better way for him to finish than the Paris Olympics?
Right. That's pretty cool.
And he is playing on the team this summer as well. Anyways,
a couple Gobert of and him, Gobert and Fournier are like, they are all in on France.
Listen, man, Fournier has inflicted some pain on the Americans several times.
One hell of a FIBA player. Like, say what you want about the direction his NBA career has gone over the last couple of years. Like, in FIBA, he is a beast.
Well, and those guys have really brought the program, you know, into a totally new era too. Like, I mean, they've really been the golden generation, those three guys and Nando DiColo together. Like, they've turned
silver generation, I guess you'd say. They won the silver at the European Championships and the Olympics. So, but still pretty good. Silver is pretty good. Anyway, a couple of things from Team USA as I talked to some people around the team. The player that I had several people say has really impressed them and been like much better than they were expecting is Ben Austin Reeves.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's only what I said from Vegas, just stealing the line.
Yeah, but he talked to people who know what they're looking at.
Well, played.
2 weeks have passed since then, and they're still saying Austin Reeves. Mikal Bridges.
Him and Tyrese coming off the bench is going to be, I think, pretty devastating in that tournament. I mean, that's the thing that stood out to me. Those guys come in, they push the pace, they're flying up and down. They both share the ball really well. They both can shoot it. They're a lot of fun to watch together.
Hey, and we have talked about, like, Austin Reeves is the Lakers' third best player. Like, if you talk about trios in the league, they got to come up in that conversation.
No question.
Yeah, he's also really into golf. So, like,
oh, good Lord.
Huge
Brian's new favorite player. He's on the Lakers. He's into golf. Sign him up.
Yeah, exactly.
Going up.
Wendy's going to be wearing, what's his shoe company? Wendy's going to be wearing some of those.
He just had a shoe come out, right? Didn't he just have a signature shoe?
It's one of the Chinese brands. I don't think it's Anta. That's who Kyrie's with and Klay Thompson, but I might be wrong. Anyways, Wendy's going to be, he'll bust out a new pair of those.
Riggerer? R-I-G-O-R-E-R?
And I had not heard of him, but now.
The AR1.
Do they make golf shoes? That's the next question. Jackson, look it up.
Yeah, Wendy will have them on the course.
I was going to say, if they make them, you're going to have them by the time you get home from Abu Dhabi.
They'll all be wearing them at the country club at Omaha.
I do have my golf shoes with me. I did not bring my clubs. I rented clubs. I might have played today in Abu Dhabi. Look, if you tee off before 7 a.m.,
well, if you rented clubs and didn't play, that would be a strange move. So
I don't do anything before 7 a.m.
Well, I left the hotel at like around 5:45 to tee off.
We're back to the windy sleep updates, but now it's voluntary. It's voluntary sleep.
Dusting the cobwebs out at the rain. Gotta get some swings in.
Listen, man, you know, when you're get an opportunity to play golf in Abu Dhabi, you got to take advantage of it.
You got to do it.
Mikal Bridges obviously had a sort of breakout season. He's playing a really important role. You know, this team, they're electing to play small. They're playing Paolo Banchero at sort of backup center quite a bit. Mm-hmm. They're not bulky. You know, they've got some sort of thin guys between Brandon Ingram and Tyrese Halliburton and Mikal Bridges. And, you know, Cam Johnson isn't exactly bulky. You know,
the long and quick.
Spain the other day out rebounded him pretty significantly. They are going to get pushed around a little bit that way, but they want to be very switchable, very rangy on defense, and then get the ball up the court. That's her style. And Bridges is exactly that type of player. And, one of the things, Jackson just gave me an update. No golf shoes.
When he's heartbroken. Hey, has Ingram bulked up though? Just watching on TV, he looks like his arms look bigger.
I don't know. I will ask him.
I'll ask him
that question.
I did not think he looked bigger.
Maybe not.
Cade Cunningham was the one guy who stood out looking bigger from a physical strength standpoint in Vegas. Everybody else sort
of muscle watch 2023.
Yes.
That's always good. By the way, gained 12 pounds of pure muscle.
So Chip England, who is the shooting doctor coach for years in San Antonio, is now with the Thunder.
Oh, that's why it's a rivalry.
Right. He's been working with Paolo Banchero on his shot, trying to help him out with that. Nothing like a Thunder helping out a team from the Eastern Conference. No problem. You may need him to hit a shot or two here in the next 2 weeks. So it's, everybody's sort of feeling good.
They need to get Chip England with Canada so he can keep working with Lou Dort or Australia.
Well, the guy that's been interesting is in watching Canada a little bit. We're seeing Shai Gilgeous-Alexander shooting some step back threes that look pretty good. And yeah, it's the FIBA line. It's a little closer, but if Shai adds that to the arsenal, it's going to be pretty nasty.
Shai has looked awesome in the warm-up games.
Big news, no Jamal Murray, by the way. We haven't talked about that on the pod.
That wasn't that much of a stunner. Jamal Murray went to training camp with the Team Canada, spent a week in Toronto with them. But then when they went overseas, they've been in Europe for the last 10, 15, 10, 12 days. He didn't go with them. And so he made an announcement on, what was it, Wednesday, that he's not going to play. So the fact that he didn't travel with them overseas, I mean, it didn't 100% rule him out, but it was pretty unlikely.
Well, was your read that he went to camp just trying to kind of get some rapport, some chemistry with those guys and hope to play in the Olympics next year?
You know, I wasn't there. I don't know. You know,
I think the word had been they were pretty optimistic. I think he was going to play. So I don't know if there was a setback or if he just thought, hey, I don't want to push it or what, but
I can speak to that because he said in his release that he was still focusing on his recovery. And it kind of was like, well, did he get hurt? He's not injured. You know, there's no problem. It's just, you know,
coming off a long season.
I think the situation is the same for Jokic. I think Jokic is looking at the same thing. They're coming off a long season. They're looking ahead and they're thinking, we might have we're hoping to have a long season next year. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to then go play in the Olympics.
Well, and in Murray's case, a year and a half off, and I don't know if this made any had any influence, but like when you watch your teammate Vlatko Chanchar go down with a torn ACL playing for his national team.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, probably didn't help motivate him to want to play in the World Cup this year.
Well, and the other interesting thing is, too, the reason this tournament is this year is because FIBA wanted to have it like opposite the other World Cup, and they're trying to like make this the more preferred tournament to the Olympics. And all we've seen over and over again is that the players, the guys who are playing in the games, not just here, but other places, they value the Olympics.
Of course.
And that's the one they care about. And if this tournament was when it should be, which is last year, like it always used to be, and it was every 2 years with the Olympics, more of these guys would probably play. But instead, because it is, like you said, you're playing this tournament, then you go right into the season, then you're playing the Olympics next year, which are early, by the way. They're going to be starting in July. So it's just a huge ask to do both of them. And so we've seen a bunch of guys opt out of doing this one, and it's hurting the overall product of the tournament. FIBA wins again.
They also have been taking it more around the world. They've been playing it in Asia. And in the next World Cup in 4 years is going to be in Qatar because why not? Yeah. And, you know,
basketball power.
Qatar. You know, Qatar should be lovely in August, as I can tell you from Abu Dhabi. It's glorious here. Qatar is like just across the Persian Gulf. So
you have to wake up early to golf there too.
Maybe by then Austin Reeves will have golf shoes. I can get some pair.
Dude, you got to get on that. Like, tell them, like, dude, what are you doing here?
Jackson, do they make golf balls? That's the next question I have. I think I know the answer to that. Before we move on, I just got to tell you, there was a fascinating thing that happened when the Americans played Spain that has been already become legend within Team USA. So they played in Spain. They played Spain in Malaga on Sunday night. And it was really a high level contest game. The Spanish pulled ahead in the second half and the Americans had to really fight back. But it was not maybe the best officiated game. Okay. And we mentioned that when we talked on the pod last time. So what I didn't see, cause it wasn't on TV, I wasn't with the team yet. But at halftime they honored.
I told you this. Referees.
Was it on TV and I missed it?
Yes.
McMahon was all over this.
This might be the reason I ended up taking a damn nap.
Now I remember. Now I remember that you mentioned it. But to a man, everybody's mentioned this moment. Team USA like was just in, couldn't believe what they were seeing. And like this referee, like it's becoming, the story is getting longer and longer. The guy who is the head of the Spanish Basketball Federation is Jorge Garbajosa, former Raptor, former NBA Rookie of the Year. I might point out, I believe Rogier Garbajosa wasn't he?
Well,
is that incorrect?
You go on with your chit chat.
Okay. Tell you in 2 seconds, just to make sure.
Garbajosa embraces.
Nearly certain you were wrong.
He was all rookie.
All
rookie.
He was played all one season in the NBA.
He played one season?
He played one season and then seven games the next season. Yes, he did. Yes,
he played one season right with Toronto when he was 29.
Yeah, he was all rookie, though. Not rookie.
Jackson, cut that out of the. Forget your vacation. Don't cut that out. Don't make me sound stupid.
Absolutely do not cut out that Brian just loudly announced that the garbage man, Jorge Garbajosa, was rookie of the year.
Well, I think he was like 28. And you know, he was
that part you were close to right about. He was 29.
All right. Anyway, every person who's told me this story talks about the length of the hug that Jorge Garbajosa gave this referee. And the referee is like wiping tears.
Oh, yeah.
And like some people are like, it was a 10-second hug. Then people like, it was a 15-second hug.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't even know if the players even saw it. I thought they were in the locker room, but they're going, oh yeah, he hugged him for 2 minutes. You know, it's like the hug keeps getting longer and longer.
This is what people tune into the Hoop Collective for. Jorge Garbajosa hug times.
It's August. The FIBA ref situation is definitely a thing.
No question. It,
like there's all kinds of like conspiracy theories / corruption, all this kind of stuff, homerism. And like when I was over there at Eurobasket in Cologne, there were like fans standing outside the arena, like with signs and stuff, protesting how crappy the refereeing was. And part of the deal is FIBA is at war with EuroLeague. And so the refs who are in EuroLeague, which are like the best refs in Europe, can't ref FIBA games. So it's like, you know, this is the most important tournament, Eurobasket, most important tournament in Europe. And it's like if you had G League refs on the NBA finals.
Listen, man, like
FIBA, all about the basketball. All about the basketball, FIBA.
I wouldn't say this happens regularly, but I've heard about just in recent years, this is not like something from the 80s, referees walking off the court mid-game because the fans are like, you know, throwing things at them and whatever. But it was a good experience for Team USA to be into that situation. By the way, there was a play in the Spain game where Mikal Bridges was called for two fouls on the same play. A guy was driving to the basket and he fouled him. First whistle. And then the guy was going for the continuation and Bridges like brought his hand down on his arm to prevent the continuation. Yeah. And another referee came in and called the unsportsmanlike on that.
Oh, wow.
And you only get five fouls. Okay. And they called two fouls within 1 second of each other.
He used up 40% of them in a second.
Well, you're only technically allowed. This is the thing. You're allowed four fouls. The fifth, you're done. So he used 50% of his allowed fouls. But
What kind of math is that? That's insane.
You can only play with four fouls. You can't play with five.
On a pod where you said so many insane things, declaring that he used 50% of his allowed fouls when he got two of his five fouls might take the cake. What are we doing here?
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Bontemps, you got trivia?
I do not, but I think somebody else does.
I will step in and save the day. Pinch with hit. Some trivia. With I am the whiz of the quiz. So I will step in and save the day here. Yes, Jorge Garbajosa was a first team all rookie selection in 2006.
I get partial credit.
Oh, 2006-07. He actually was tied for the last spot on the first team. So there were six guys on the first team. You know, the NBA was like into participation ribbons and crap back then, apparently. Who are the other five first team all-rookie selections when the great Jorge Garbajosa?
So this is the 2006 draft. So LaMarcus Aldridge.
LaMarcus Aldridge actually was tied with Jorge, which surprised me a little bit. Yes, that's one.
Was Barnani?
He was a first team all rookie.
Trying to think of guys who were drafted that year.
I got no chance on this. No chance.
Trying to think. 2006 draft.
So who was rookie of the year? Was it?
I'm trying to think. Brandon Roy was in that draft, wasn't he?
Brandon Roy was definitely in that draft. He was another.
Yeah, he won rookie of the year. I'm nearly certain. Trying to think. Brandon Roy, Bargnani. So I need two more guys, right?
You need two more guys. Brandon Roy was the rookie of the year.
Randy Foy wasn't first team all NBA,
yes,
right?
Sorry. Wow. Bontemps.
Garbajosa was robbed.
Randy Foy, you got it, bro.
Randy Foy was traded for Brandon Roy, I believe. I believe they're swap picks.
That's right. That's right. They were. I took 14 hours to get here on the plane. You could have given me that 14 hours and I wouldn't have gotten Randy Foy without looking it up.
I'm trying to think of Bontemps for getting that. Tyrus Thomas was drafted in that draft, but he definitely wasn't going to be.
Tyrus Thomas was traded for LaMarcus Aldridge.
Right.
The picks were swapped. Bulls.
Yeah, this last guy is definitely a name you know.
Oh, there's one more guy.
I named four guys, so I had to come up with the fifth guy.
Yeah, this guy is definitely a name that you know. We actually discussed him on the pod in a controversial sense. There was some controversy about him on the last pod during trivia, might I add.
Maybe
yes. You tried to pull a slick one.
I'm trying to remember what the question was last week. I remember the controversy, but I can't remember the question. It's driving me crazy.
This is the guy.
If anybody gets this without looking it up, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. I feel good about getting Randy Foy. I can't. Right, I'm blanking on this.
Just tell us.
Give me one other hint besides we talked about him on the pod last week, because I'm struggling. That doesn't help me right now.
Let's see. He was traded this offseason.
Oh, Rudy Gay.
Rudy Gay.
Oh, Rudy Gay. I should have got that. Rudy Gay,
the one who you tried to sneak in.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm happy I got Randy Foy. That was decent work.
Very impressive. Hey, you got four of the five, and then with the hint, you got the.
I'll take it. That was a good question. Jorge Garbajosa. I've not heard about him in a long time.
He's a smart man because he knows how to butter up referees.
Luca needs to learn.
You know what? You ain't lying. So we had an awkward situation last week. We recorded this whole James Harden podcast on Sunday night. And then we woke up on Monday morning and Harden had just slayed.
Some would call it pressure.
76ers. I don't know about pressure. It would we were talking about, we were like, well, maybe he'll come back, or maybe
you were talking about that. I was talking about this relationship blown to smithereens. So I love that it came out. I look like
he still might come back. We'll see.
Yeah. The thing about it is, so I know that's been a huge topic for the last few days, but I just want to say, like Bont Temps just said, this obviously is huge damage has been done at this point. And, you know, I think one of the things that was clear, not clear, but one of the things that happened here was, I think the Clippers had decided that there was no trade. And so I think the Clippers were going to move on from it. Mm-hmm. And at least from talking to Philly about it. And that, I think the only option that the Philly had at the time was the Clippers. And so when that never got off the ground, from what I understand, like they had multiple conversations, but you know, I mean, you can see the two rosters, you can see what the trade pieces are, you can understand why there wouldn't. And as long as Philly wasn't interested in taking some assets from the Clippers and then making an offer, probably with Tyrese Maxey for Damian Lillard, I don't see how a Clipper trade makes a ton of sense for them anyway. So I think what ticked James off was that they announced that they wanted to bring him back, and he was reacting to that more than anything.
I think he's been ticked. We can't say disgruntled because Kyrie doesn't like that word. I think he's been ticked for some time now.
Right. But I also think what Bontemps said shouldn't be forgotten. As of right now, and circumstances can change, as of right now, James Harden's best option of a bunch of unsavory options, such as holding out or coming and, you know, doing some sort of sabotage action, his best option, as far as I can see, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, is to probably play for the Sixers. And the Sixers' best option is to get James Harden to play for them. Now, not the James Harden that played for the Rockets or the Nets when he wanted out, but like James Harden really trying.
The one from last year who was really good.
Yeah, and listen,
ultimately, my best option career-wise is to win the lottery.
Yeah, no, I think the best retirement plan I have is to win the lottery. So all I got to do is win the lottery and I'll have a great retirement. No problem.
That certainly is, I think, a good analogy for the situation in a lot of ways right now, at least from the James Harden perspective. The problem that James Harden has is, and we talked about this a little bit the other day, if you look at this situation, and when he opted into his contract, what he did was remove a lot of different avenues that this could potentially go, right? So now he's opted into this deal. You can't extend off that contract. You can't give him more money. So those options are off the board. In terms of trading him, there's not a team in the league that wants James Harden. Now,
let me finish.
Okay. When I say that a team doesn't want James Harden, I'm not saying teams won't take James Harden. There are teams that will take James Harden and have him on their team for the right price.
Okay.
But to me, and it's the same thing as the Damian Lillard situation. There's one team in the league that wants Damian Lillard. And that's the Miami Heat. Clearly, they're the one team that we know of that's really willing. When I say that, I'm saying is willing to pay a significant price to trade for him.
We're playing semantics here, but there's a lot of teams that would be happy to have James Harden or Damian Lillard. There's not a team that's willing to give up significant value for James Harden.
But that's what I'm saying.
Different, but fine.
Well, but that's what I'm saying wants. Wants is in not I'll have him, but I want to get him. So the problem James has is there's not a suitor that's going to come in and give the kind of value that Philly's going to go, yeah, for us right now, it makes sense to trade James Harden. Like, yeah, there's teams that would be interested in having him for expiring contracts, which aren't doing Philly any good, mm-hmm. or stuff they don't want, which isn't doing Philly any good. But there's nobody that's coming in saying, we really want this guy. And that's why we're at this stalemate. Because even if, let's say Daryl Morey woke up today and said, you know, I've had this run with James Harden. I got the big painting. It's time to move on. We need to trade him. There's nowhere to trade him. Like, for a deal that's not going to get you fired or get you in a situation where it's like, how the hell did you trade this guy for 10 cents on the dollar? Or infuriate
Joel Embiid.
Well, that's right. The problem is Morey is trying. If it's not about salvaging the situation with James Harden, it's about preventing the situation from Embiid from blowing
your
face and basically sending your franchise into a tailspin.
That's right. And that's where this is a really, I mean, from a game theory or negotiation standpoint, whatever way you want to look at it, I think it's a fascinating situation because there's really not a way to resolve it. Like, James could sit here and say, yeah, I'm really mad that I can't get out of Philly. I don't want to be here, but he can't get traded. He can't get more money. He can't get more years. So what is he going to do? Because it's not like the Sixers are batting away teams offering several first round picks and young players and all this stuff.
And for Morey,
what do we do?
Morey would rather have a big mess that maybe he can figure out a way to clean up than make a bad trade.
Yeah.
And so, the question at this point is, all right, James, are you really not going to show up for camp? And then if you do show up, like, how are you going to, how are you going to make this thing even messier? I tell you what, though, like, what's one of the first questions asked James Harden? Hey, what did Daryl Morey lie to you about? That's going to be an interesting answer. It's going to be a really interesting answer. I mean, James can make this thing. And when Ramona says James Harden's just getting started, I 100%.
Well, and I'd also love to know why he opted in, because that is the thing that when you look at this whole situation, that's the moment when he did that. When so many of these potential avenues to do other things or get more money or do all that stuff went away, then it really came down to either you get traded or you play in Philly, or I guess you sit out and just not play at all. But then, as Bobby Marks has laid out, that's not a path to like getting out of Philly in a year.
Yeah, listen, since
if he doesn't report to the team for 30 days after the start of the season, the Sixers can block him from becoming a free agent. This is a thing in the CBA to remove the idea that you could hold out and wait out your contract. So he literally would lose his free agency and potentially lose the money of this last season if he just said, I'm not going to show up until you trade me.
Yeah.
So the answer to that, if you're fighting fire with fire, is to show up and tank.
Cause on holy hell. Yeah.
He's experienced doing that. I would say since Rob Pelinka went to the Lakers, and he repped James Harden among others, obviously. Harden has opted not to have either an agent at all or, a power agent, and a big name agent. And he's saved a lot of money in commission over the years. And I think it's come back to bite him with this situation.
Well, I will again say, Philly was not that far away from winning the East last year. Now, if you're a Heat fan, you may think that your team would have won against the Sixers just as they won against the Celtics. I can't prove that. I saw the Heat go up 3-0. Maybe they were so red hot that they would have beaten Philly.
Let's just look at the East for a second. Let's just look at it quick, right? But Milwaukee brings everybody back, but their guys are all a year older. Giannis just had knee surgery. Let's see where they're at this year. They also fired Mike Budenholzer, hired Adrian Griffin, never been a head coach. We'll see how that goes. Boston makes this wild swing of a trade, doing Marcus Smart for Kristaps Porzingis, probably raises their ceiling, also undoubtedly lowers their floor. They've got a lot of injury-prone guys, a lot of guys with injury questions on their team. Could be great, could be a step back. You've got Miami. Doesn't re-sign Gabe Vincent, doesn't re-sign Max Strus, hasn't traded for Dame. Like, they're not as good as they were last year. Like, if James Harden just shows up and is willing to play this year, you like Philadelphia should be right there with these other teams.
When James Harden's telling you he's quitting, believe him.
No, I'm not. I'm not saying like, I'm not trying to say he's going to show up and play. I'm simply pointing out if he was committed to this team for this season, let's say he'd opted out and re-signed for 3 years and a number, the Kyrie number, and he was happy. Right. You could look at this Philly team and say, there's every reason to think this is the year they break through. They hire Nick Nurse, guy who's proven to be very good in the playoffs, making adjustments. Joel is back. Tyrese Maxey should get better. You know, they can find more ways to get more out of Tobias Harris. PJ Tucker was very good in the playoffs last year. Like you could say, hey, this team is, they got De'Anthony Melton, one of the best reserve guards in the league coming off the bench. Like you could say they have all the pieces to finally break through, but as only could happen in Philly for the 12th straight year, the offseason is chaos and James Harden is mad. We have no idea if he's going to show up or if he is going to try to light the place on fire if he does show up, and that there's no guarantee they're going to have any kind of success this year. You know, it's just like, it's just crazy because they weren't that far away and now they feel life like, you know, like oceans away with all this going on.
But you know what? He's selling a whole lot of wine in China.
That was amazing. If you don't know what they're referring to, he was on a Chinese social media platform, at least a video platform. I don't know how you pronounce it.
It's like TikTok.
Yeah. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. But he had apparently 10,000 bottles of his wine to sell. Mm-hmm. And there was a very popular influencer who was in there, and there was a bunch of people there. And look, I don't know the commerce logistics about like how long the, you could actually buy before it opened, but they put the wine on sale and in 10 seconds, the Chinese audience bought 10,000 bottles of wine, selling it out. It registered as sold out within 10 seconds. And look, I don't know how that all works, but let's just say James Harden was.
How many bottles of allowed wine was there to be bought? How many was it?
Well,
Actually, Wendy math 8,000, I think.
I was going to say, yeah, 8,000. You're allowed to buy 8,000. There are 10,000.
You're allowed to buy 10,000. You weren't allowed to buy 10,000. Actually, you're allowed to buy 9,000. Anyway, it's worth finding the video if you can, because when James sees that he sells out in 10 seconds, pops his eyes.
The man sold some Adidas over there this week too. I can assure you of that. And also he might average 50 points per game next season for the Shanghai Sharks.
You can go play for Yao.
Just saying,
yeah, well, two Rockets legends together in China.
He's over there talking about, hey, I might have to finish my career in China, and that might be the path this thing's heading. I asked Delonte, I saw him in Dallas when he came back from playing a year in China. I said, hey man, how you like it? How'd you like it over there? He goes, man, the money's good and all the shots you can take. That sounds like a James Harden dream scenario.
I don't think the money is as good as the $35 million he can make by playing for the Sixers. All right. Well, we'll see how that develops. Right now, I do think that Harden is still in the anger stage of this situation. And so we'll see if any more salvos come. I'm in agreement with Ramona on that. But it's a long way between now and
45 days to media day,
45 glorious days. All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to our producers, Jackson and Bruce. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to McMahon. We will talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV.
Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.